phone off, away from the world, by myself, being consistent every day. I've been a president, I've been a CEO, been a brand builder, an advisor, an investor, a partner, architected philanthropic programs, but a horrific moment in July 2022, all that was dead. Now I'm on a mission to build my family legacy.
Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point. And the point of today's episode, episode 75, is Jim Walter, the man behind the careers of MMA stars Stipe Miocic, James Krause, and the Lionheart, Anthony Smith, who is often regarded as impressively humble and someone who has been through hell and back, literally, which I'm sure we'll dive into this episode, the renowned UFC manager, the great man, Cleveland's own Jim Walter. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Joe. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I'm super excited for our conversation. And my first question for you, Jim, is what is the best thing that there is to know about you?
Well, Joe, the best thing, honest truth, man, I shouldn't be here. You know, I've been a president, I've been a CEO, been a brand builder, an advisor, an investor, a partner, architected philanthropic programs. But honestly, in a horrific moment in July 2022, all that was dead. I found a way to persevere and rise from the ashes, if you will. But essentially, I was left for dead, man. Now I'm on a mission to build my family legacy. And you could sum that up in, if I could say one word, I would say defiant. And channeling and harnessing that defiance into really doubling down and being laser focused on outcomes. So the best thing about myself is I would say I'm the aftermath.
That's amazing. Yeah. The perseverance that one has to have to really build a family legacy in your shoes is tremendous. In any shoes, but in your shoes is tremendous. What do you want the legacy to be?
You know, I just want to make my family proud. One of the things I regret is not, you know, stopping smelling the roses. And at certain points I took, you know, things for granted. So I really want to make my mom proud, make my grandma proud. And kind of really channeling, you know, what Ignatius taught us, being a man for others. I'm very rooted in that mentality.
What is it about other people that makes it so important? Like, why is that worth the while?
I think service to others is the most important thing anyone can do. You know, helping someone out and just leaving everyone and everything that, you know, you interact with on a daily basis in a better place than you found it. It's really important to me.
Absolutely. You, interestingly, in an article that was written about you in regards to your work with the UFC fighters and the MMA world, they talked about how you were always on the mats with your clients, basically, and that was kind of a faux pas, or like an obsolete idea for that realm. What it's kind of to me sounding like you, right? You were a guy that rolls up your sleeves and gets in the dirty work.
Yeah,
and that I feel like tests right into that. Why have you found that leadership style has been effective for you?
You know, not a lot of people, like agents, managers, representation, kind of get in the trenches, right? Selfishly, it was great for me. It was a way to unplug, learn more. There's nothing better than jujitsu, and trying to, you know, solve that problem, that equation, you know, live on the mats. But I was training with some of the best in the world, coaches and athletes. So, you know, iron sharpens iron. It made me better. But really, like, locking down and training with some of my guys, getting ready for a fight, it made me understand, you know, what they're going through from their perspective. And then not only that, but being able to form, you know, a strategy that works for that opponent, you know, at that time with, you know, my client. And then in some situations too, I would corner fighters in their fights. And it just allowed me to understand what they're going through, and what we were trying to achieve and add more value. But very untraditional. Not a lot of guys do that. And honestly, you know, I'm grateful that I did that because jujitsu saved my life. I mean, I wouldn't be here without it for sure. So, you know, it's a blessing for sure.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of those fields that, like many, when it's a puzzle, you have to adapt on the fly and like figure out where does this piece go into it. Yeah. It's that idea that when you're trying to crack the code, it looks different every single time.
Yeah, for sure. Like with a puzzle, like the most interesting thing for me is finding that anomaly, right? And being able to recognize it in real time on the fly and understanding it. And just all that training, it allowed me to develop that skill.
Jim, you mentioned you trained with some of the best in the world. Give us that background a little bit. Talk to us what that looks like.
In terms of?
You said you just got to work with some of the best trainers in the
world. Yeah, yeah.
That kind of shaped you.
Coaches and fighters, yeah. You know. Having Stipe demolish you on a mat, or, you know, rolling with Anthony Smith, or, you know, great black belts. I've trained with Jay Valco. I've trained with Coach Busy Mario out in Denver. A lot of good guys. And then MMA coaches like Saeed Hateem and Coach Mark Montoya, really good guys. I got to train with Ryan Hall for a little bit, which was awesome in DC. You know, I was on my back a lot, which is not a good place to be, but turns out, it could be life-saving. So it was a really good experience.
How did you get to that level to be able to work with such esteemed fighters?
You know, it's kind of weird because Stipe was my first client. It's not every day. We started working together right when he won the title against Fabricio Werdum. I think it was in Curitiba. And we worked together all the way through the third Daniel Cormier fight. So it's not every day that you like get into the business and you're working with the heavyweight champion of the world, arguably the greatest heavyweight ever. So it was a little backwards for me. It was great, but that kind of allowed me to really, be selective in who I worked with from there, and build, you know, a client base that was synergistic and, you know, that I could serve. So I plugged into Factory X in Denver. Coach Mark Montoya runs that gym and represented a lot of guys from Denver. I really believed in, and still do believe in, what Mark is doing out there in Denver. The results speak for themselves, but it was being able to work with those guys, I'm definitely grateful.
Were you a wrestler in high school?
I was not.
Okay.
I was a football player and basketball player. You know, kind of dabbled in everything, but no wrestling. Which I think is good, because wrestling and jiu-jitsu are very different, right? You know, giving up your back, things like that. You know, MMA, never give up your back, and wrestling, you know, get points for it. So yeah.
What shifted your interest from the football world into, say, jiu-jitsu? What sparked the initial drive or desire?
You know, something new. Like I wanted to do something, and I continued to try to do things physically that sharpened my mental. And getting on the mats for the first time, like, and just getting smeared and plastered all over the place for a really, really long time. And so still coming back, you know, that's where I really learned, like, to grow. And then it became more intriguing because I started to understand it more. And I started to see things differently. And I think the best part that I loved and definitely got addicted to is that, you know, I could leave all that stress behind. Like, it's a very freeing feeling. You're not thinking about anything else. So it's using a different part of your brain that I never used before. And from there, it was history. You know, I kept training as much as I possibly could.
Having that task in front of you is so primitive. It's right there.
Yeah.
And I think that's not something that you have in most other realms of the world.
Yeah.
It's like, you can get to anything you're doing on your computer at another time or whatever the case may be, but when it's right in front of you and it's coming at you, you have to deal with it. You have to address it right there head on.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, there weren't, you know, I'm not a professional athlete, right? I'm never going to be. But it still allowed me to be that man in the arena. And it just being able to, you know, strategically work through things, or, you know, tapping into grit, that feeling second to none.
You're touching on your mindsets a little bit, and one of the ones that you've put into your bio is, it says, "Let's win together." What does that mean for you, and why is that so important that you put it out there?
Yeah, I think, you know, winning together, it, you know, as a team, you know, strength is in numbers, right? And, you know, I wouldn't be here without a lot of people. You know, I've been fortunate to have a lot of great people in my life. So it's awesome to be able to collaborate and achieve a goal collectively.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me that a sport that's so individualistic is what ultimately requires such a big team too.
For sure.
And there's more to it than just one-on-one combat, if you will.
Yeah, it takes an army.
It does.
For sure.
How you've been able to apply that let's win together notion and also the idea of you getting on the mat into other areas of your life and helping other people win?
So we were talking about this before we started. One of my new ventures is I just founded a sports promotion and media company to serve amateur women in sport. So the 250,000 women that are student athletes currently. And our approach is a little different. It's a very underserved market. There's a lot of white space for investors, brand, content creation, all that, but there's no strategy. It's very unorganized. So being able to apply that strategy to help these women make money, build their brand, build a long-term future, you know, only 1% of those 250,000 make it, right? So most of them are going to have careers outside of being a professional athlete. But really, to answer your question, the value is all of those women together. With some of the new NIL legislation and what Trump has passed and different things, it allows, you know, the UCLA bench players, right? Basketball, women basketball players, together, their value is a lot higher. If you look at Jeremiah Smith, right, from Ohio State, I think he makes about $4.2 million in NIL money. If you take it's apples to apples, right? I think he has what's called a million followers, something like that. Probably more, but let's just use that as a base.
Sure.
If you take the Nebraska women's volleyball team together, they have about the same reach and engagement, but they're only making, let's call it just apples to apples, a quarter of $1 million, right? So 75% less, but their reach and engagement, it over indexes. So the strength is really in numbers collectively together. And that's kind of the model and one of the pieces of the strategy that we're going to execute here moving forward for Bloom.
So Bloom's the name,
Bloom's
which
the
is
name.
So appropriate
House
for
Bloom. House you of Bloom.
I love it. Those are great ties there too. For Bloom and in your goals with working with all these women, what's kind of the end game? Is it to bring them some sort of monetary representation? Is it to back them? Is it to inspire them? Is it to inspire others?
All of the above. Most immediately to defray some of the cost of living. You know, these women are very underappreciated, undervalued, whether it be, you know, internships, externships, providing financial literacy, even, you know, partnering with an AT&T and telco, right, to cover phone bills and costs, whether it be a DoorDash or, you know, even outfitting, having conversations with Biore and Aloe and Lululemon. So immediately defraying the cost, but really giving them skills, relationships, experiences that they can build on for the long term and for the future. Because again, you know, 99% of them don't become professional athletes. So making sure that they can get those, you know, six-figure salary jobs coming right out of school, and really kind of staying ahead of the curve and diminishing some of that so that once they graduate, they can hit the ground running.
Yeah. It's striking me as if you're almost bridging that gap between the professional world and the athletic world, recognizing what's needed in both and then being able to apply it to each athlete individually, but again, collectively as a unit.
For sure. And it only works again, collectively, being able to have, you know, a brand endorsement that's scalable by vertical for, you know, either by team or by sport. The strength is really in the numbers.
It's interesting too. I think that realm is growing so much right now too, right? I think of someone like Caitlin Clark or Angel Reese or even Sophie Cunningham, like all these women athletes. Those are all basketball players, but that's the world. I love this. So, but all of these women.
So you're biased already.
I know. It's what you know, right? It's always what you know. I'm like, the basketball world's where I spend a lot of my entertainment viewing. But where I was kind of going with it was that I feel like that recognition is starting to become bigger and bigger. Like they're on the faces of a lot of different things, right? I think Sophie Cunningham just did a big modeling shoot. Caitlin Clark's done stuff with Gatorade and a bunch of other things. And the list goes on. So that is a field that I think is, the opportunity is there, and then the recognition is starting to grow, and people are maybe perhaps opening up to that that idea?
For sure. I think, you know, there's a lot of momentum, especially with basketball. You know, the WNBA or the WNBPA just renegotiated, right? So now people are getting, you know, compensated reasonably, but I still think they're undervalued. There's still a lot of work to do. And you mentioned basketball, but if you look at like the Harper Murrays of Nebraska volleyball, you know, she's a star. She's a hell of an athlete. And I think, you know, her time is about to come and she deserves to be compensated what her worth is.
That's really great. When you started, did you start reaching out to different schools or did you start going for the athlete approach? Is it more school to school basis or is it more athlete to you basis?
You know, I was probably the first agent in the NIL space back in 23, when Justice Kavanaugh ruled that student athletes could make money based on their name, image, and likeness. And I had a roster of about 90 different athletes across sport, across schools, men and women. And it was just bad timing. I always say, you know, pioneers get slaughtered and settlers flourish. We were the first to market there. And there are just a lot of hurdles. I mean, you know, it was all governed at the state level. Now it's national. So, you know, you could have Carly Cross, a Boise State soccer player, and Lathan Ransom, Ohio State safety, and the rules are different by state. And then, you know, the athletic departments and kind of the governance internally were behind. So like, they're just very choppy and spotty. But out of that, I met a lot of great people. We kind of moved away from that NIL space. But probably my favorite clients were the women that I represented. Taylor Chavez of Arizona and Oregon, for example. She's a privilege to work with. So being able to, you know, re-engage with Taylor, who hopefully will be working at Bloom, and being able to, you know, tap into what she sees and identify the right women, I think that's the start. But really, it's getting teams and schools on board because, again, you know, strength in numbers. But can't do that overnight. So we're going to take a very targeted approach at first.
Yeah, you have to. Everything takes time, right? All the good things take time.
Father Time is undefeated.
It is undefeated.
Jim, on July 3rd of 22, you experienced some wicked tragedy in your life. When I had first heard the story, I was like had chills just perpetually for a long time. And when we talk about something taking a long time to overcome and to work through, I would imagine that this is something that is one of those examples. And also fuels your fire much to what you've alluded to throughout our conversation so far. Do you want to touch on that day and what that looks like for you?
Yeah, for sure. On that day, so I came home from Arizona for my birthday party. My birthday is July 1st.
Okay.
A few days late, go figure. And at my birthday lunch, unfortunately, my mother and grandmother were brutally murdered in front of me. And I was stabbed numerous times and I'm surprised I made it, to be honest. So I was badly mangled. And dealing with that, it's taken years. You know, I thought I was coming home to Cleveland for the weekend, and I've been here for over 3 years now. So it's taken numerous surgeries, numerous days at Metro, going through trauma treatment, everything. And I would say the biggest thing for me is I always thought I could outwork and outsmart my trauma. That was probably one of my biggest problems was me, honestly. I tried to outmaneuver this thing and outwork it, and it doesn't work like that. But I had no idea. So I've learned a lot. I've learned how to deal with that and table it or utilize it when needed. But it does fuel me. My risk adversity has changed. My perspective on things have changed. You know, I have nothing to lose. At this point, like I said at the beginning, like, I shouldn't even be here. So everything's more upside now. You know, I don't have to provide for my mom and my grandma and my brother anymore. So I can, you know, again, be a little more risk adverse moving forward. And that's one of the reasons why I want to start Bloom as well. My mom was very passionate about women in sport. And I can also identify with where some of these women are now. just having some conversations with some of our, you know, initial clients, I can understand how they feel, you know, underappreciated or undervalued. Because I've been on hiatus for 3 years. I can't be imagined their whole career. They've been on a hiatus, right? So it's really, you know, everything happens for a reason. It's hard to put my finger on why something like that would happen. But it's changed me a lot. And I hope for the better at this point.
I feel like when you are on borrowed time, you end up believing that you know you're here for some reason that has to be greater than the tragedy. Mm. Like that can't be the only defining thing in your life, right? There's this notion that, no, I'm going to go and make the most and help young female athletes and bring my family name, pride and joy and all of these great things. When you look at that situation and you can say out of humility that you brought difficulty with the tragedy, with the trauma, how are you navigating it now to say that, okay, I can't be the problem and address it going forward?
It's, you know, I was extremely humbled by that, the whole experience, and basically stripped of my dignity. Mm-hmm. You know, I was beaten senseless. Like I was so physically mangled, but at the same time, mentally and emotionally too. But again, with time and being consistent and doing the right things and surrounding myself with the right support and the right people, it's really positioned me to have a blank slate. And I don't know if motivated is the right word, but fuels me with a different purpose. You know, I'm still trying to figure out what that purpose is exactly. But I know I'm moving in the right direction. And at this point, you know, I don't think there's anything that can bring me down, to be honest.
Yeah. I can't even imagine, truly. And I'm so sorry. I mean, I
haven't even appreciated, man.
Yeah. Said that. Jim, how is it that you did survive? You said you ought not be here and that you were basically left for dead. Well, how did that work?
Man, you know, I couldn't do anything to save my mom or grandma, but I had to watch that happen. By the time I intervened, you know, it was a bad situation. My brother's the one who murdered my mom and grandma, so didn't see that coming. But, you know, he's kind of a monster, to be honest. He's 6'5", 240, and to have someone like that coming at you with a knife, when I was not expecting that at all, it was wild, honestly. You know, in a knife fight, the best thing you could do is run. But I actively engaged. I tried to, you know, talk him down and give him chances, which again was a mistake. There was nothing, it just led to more physical damage for me. But again, going back to jujitsu, like I took that fight outside. You know, I think I ended up 800 feet across the street, and the only reason I stopped fighting is because I ran out of blood. And luckily, you know, I was audible and help came eventually, but it was a long fight. But if I didn't know, like, from cornering fighters, like acute first aid, if I didn't know how long I had to live, if I didn't understand jujitsu and self-defense, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. Wow. Isn't it crazy how all of that comes to fruition? In
very crazy.
Like, cause most people, I would say everyone that's in this room with us right now, probably doesn't know it to the extent that you do. Right. And so, like, out of the whole audience going to listen, like, how many people do know it the way that you do? And then for it to be so necessary.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too, is like, no one really understands. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, I didn't really understand either. And to be honest, I don't know if I even do fully understand.
I don't know how one could.
Yeah. It's not comprehensible. Which, you know, led to another problem. I'm physically mangled in the hospital, right? And no one really knows what to do with me. I wake up, my family's dead, my business is dead. I can't even provide basic resources to myself. So it was like, you know, 3-4-headed monster, mm-hmm. simultaneously. So it was a lot, man. But to your point, it, you know, it did come very full circle. and grateful to be alive. But then I realized, you know, the fight kind of just begun over the past, you know, years and years.
It's interesting you say the word fight. When I was kind of thinking and reflecting and praying on this whole conversation, it struck me that in every situation, there's the opportunity to fight or flight, as we've all heard, right? And so immediately you stepped in and you fought in that situation. I guess it's a poor word, but it's, I guess, literal too. And then after the fact, you're still here. You're still grappling with all this. You're still fighting. How did you decide to keep fighting after all that?
I like your use of the word grappling.
Good point.
You know, man, I just, you know, my mom was a fighter. You know, growing up, there's a lot of adversity. She was diagnosed with cancer. Jeez. She wasn't supposed to make it, and she did. She just always found a way. Mm-hmm. So I didn't think I realized it at the time, but I grew up in that way, where she led by example, and I was absorbing it. I didn't know I'd have to tap into that now. But again, everything happens for a reason, man. Maybe that was the reason, you know. My mom prepared me, honestly, for my life now.
It sounds like she was a tremendous woman, and what she's instilled in you is something you're carrying on.
Yeah, I know, she was my mom, right? But that woman was the closest, you know, she should have been canonized, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. She was truly a saint. She was fantastic. All she was.
Here, right with you right now, right? We know that, praying for you and guiding the way. Throughout something like that, or any time that things go south, I feel like people reach out, send their condolences, right? I think that's kind of the run of the way things go. In such a dire situation, and when the people were stripped from you, when all of this came to be that people were coming and offering you their hand and their support, how were you able to decipher genuinity and people being genuine and maybe some questionable motives?
This is a tough one, man. A lot of people reached out, right? And it's almost like, you know, the murders and what happened to me kind of audited my life. To your point, there were people that were very genuine, but there are a lot of people that weren't. And, you know, people got close to monetize my downfall. It's clear now, in hindsight. Then the other piece of it is, like, I have to be accountable for my actions. And honestly, I was a disaster. There's some things I remember and some things I don't. It's crazy what, when you're in survival mode, what your brain does. So there are people that, you know, I feel like I owe amends to, people that I need to right my wrongs, or at least take accountability is the best way to put it. But then there's another group of people that just switched up on me. And honestly, those people that did switch up on me, like, thank you. It's a blessing. Like, I'm glad I know now. It took that horrible event to see through that, but thank you. And, you know, I'm more motivated than ever. And now I have a different lens that I see things through. Where all the toxic people in my life that I didn't truly understand that came to a head. But at the end of the day, man, there's a lot of people that came through too that I didn't expect to, that really showed up. You know, people sleeping on the hospital floor for 50-100 days. You know, people helping me take care of my basic needs. People, you know, just constantly lending a helping hand and always being there. And those people, like, the respect I have for them is unmeasurable. And I'm forever grateful for that group of people.
I think it speaks to a deep truth that when there are difficult situations, both great results and then also awful ones to come to be. And that's where kind of my head was going with it, because while there is all that maybe badness that can happen too from other people, like you're saying, the toxic people in your life, there are even more and probably even better just the people that show up and that are sleeping on the hospital floor for 50, for 100 days. And I think that there's something so intrinsically motivating about that when you're able to look back and reflect on it. It's like, man, like if these people can be in my corner, I can be in other people's corner like that.
For sure.
And I think it shows and validates the humanity in others and like helps us to guide our lives with that principle at the forefront.
Yeah. And it's whatever I can do to pay it forward to others too. Like I try to be of service to somebody every day. And, you know, put that Ignatius meant for others to the test. But really, you know, I'm lucky that, you know, my mom gave me the opportunity to go to Ignatius, taught me a lot. And that men for others philosophy, I'm glad I understood it because it changed my life then, but really now, like now I finally get it. I really do. And being able to have that knowledge and that experience and be able to apply that moving forward, I just want to leave the world a better place than I found it, man.
Mm-hmm. Jim, how did you get to the point that you're able to talk about this?
A lot of trauma therapy. A lot of conversations with people in my support group. A lot of people that I've stepped up to be mentors and guides or, you know, quasi moms. But a lot of work, man. Like, honestly, dude, I've been busting my ass physically, mentally every single day. The last 270 days, I'm down 68 pounds. So I was laying on my back for a long time. I went through over a year of residential trauma treatment. It sucked a lot. It's horrible. But it was the best thing I could have done. Like, I got to a point I didn't know, like, I didn't have clarity. And I knew things were going wrong, so I just removed myself from the equation. Like, phone off, away from the world, by myself, being consistent every day. And it's, the more that I learn about it, it's like I had to rewire my frontal cortex and create new pathways. Like, the old doesn't exist anymore. So it just took a lot of hard work, repetition, support from others, and doing it again and again and again. And eventually, you know, get to a place that I can have a conversation about it. And I hope that my conversation with helps somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not apples to apples for everyone. Like, I don't get it, what other people are going through, but I get it. So if I can help people with my story and use it for good, then I'm with it.
Two immediate thoughts come to mind. The first, are you familiar with Chris Williamson, Modern Wisdom Podcast?
Yeah.
So he always talks about that. He always says that, like, if you can discuss whatever trauma you've had in your life to whatever degree it may be, and you can actually go out there and talk about it, then you're at the point that you have actually addressed it wholesomely and can holistically realize what the situation is. So that struck me immediately, that you're able to talk about it. I'm like, you've put in the work, because that's what Chris's whole point is, that you've put in the work to deal with it and to make it so that you know that it's a part of who you are, and then being able to move forward in the most appropriate way possible.
Yeah. I mean, the hardest part was I didn't want it to be part of me.
Mm.
And I fought that shit for forever. You know, I was trying to put a square peg in a round hole, bashing my head against the wall. And it left me in some dark places, man. But like, once I started to understand how to coexist with this thing, and it is a part of me, you know, I used to say old Jim and new Jim, but really it's just Jim, you know, just Jim 1.0 and Jim 2.0. Like, and accepting that was huge. I think maybe that's the best way to put it. I think just my lack of acceptance for a long time, it just led to more problems. And once I started to understand it, again, it's not really quantifiable, or you can't really understand. It's very intangible, right? But I have a grasp on it, right? And I can use that to kind of propel me forward and to be able to share and have a discussion. And ultimately, man, I just hope it helps somebody else.
Yeah. That humility is so impressive, Jim. I across the board, everything I was reading is like about, and everyone that talks about you describes you as humble. And to go through such grave tragedy and to come on the other side and then to be so focused on others, because it could go one of two ways, right? You can go that way with it, or you could be the person that's been through it all and is almost closed off
as a result. And again, both we've seen both, I think, throughout our lives with people that have been through some terrible things. So for you to come out with such humility and such love and care for other people is such a testimony to you. And again, and that work that you've put in.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of shifting away from that aspect of it, but using the skills that maybe you've developed through all that work that you've done, when you go forward and you're doing your work with Bloom and all of these great opportunities that you are creating for yourself and for other people, what are the strategies that you employ for landing a deal?
What type of deal? Like, you're talking like, can you give me an example?
Sure. So let's say you're doing some work with Bloom and sure, like the Nebraska volleyball player that you mentioned, you want to work with her. What are the strategies that you employ to make it so that that person wants to work with you just as much as you want to work with them?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it needs to be the right fit both ways. You know, just because I think, let's pick on Harper for a second, and Harper Murray's a great fit, doesn't mean that I'm a great fit for her. Mm-hmm. But the more that I start to understand where these women in sport are, I think we can provide things for them. But not just talking about, you know, we're going to make you money, we're going to help you build your brand, we're going to help you create new content that can be monetized, we're going to build a long-term future for you. Showing them in an actionable way that, you know, we're doing this. At first it was a little chicken and the egg, right? But being able to even tap into like my previous experiences in direct representation across different sports, and being able to show examples of how we work through problems or we provide solutions. And you know, we were doing that and we're doing it now in a more upgraded, tailored way to these women, improving it. And also trusting my team too. Bloom is women owned and women led. One thing that I did realize is that like, just because I think something, I'm not a woman. Like as much as I try to understand the position they're in, I'm not. And we were joking. I said, you know, I was going to channel my inner femininity, right? But like I can try to do that, but really the best thing that I can do is build the strategy and the infrastructure and, you know, be the Wizard of Oz and exit and put the women that own it and lead it in a position to really, you know, make the most change as possible.
Jim, it sounds like a lesson that you've learned along the way. When you look at a situation that maybe didn't work out with, whether it's through Bloom, whether it's through any past gym work that you've done, what did that teach you?
Growth. You know, I failed at so many different things. I've been in so many situations that I handled improperly. But growing from those experiences, you know, you kind of got to go through it to understand it. Now, you know, from my experience, you know, I have a bunch of arrows in my quiver, right? Like that I didn't have before. So when something happens, like, oh, okay, that's it. No problem. So I'm grateful for, you know, call it failures or mistakes I've made or, you know, bad decisions. Because it put me in a position now to build this thing the right way, and to be prepared kind of what's moving forward and to be relentless in our execution.
Do you get worked up, Jim? I feel like after you, going through what you've been through, man, I don't know what could rattle you. Like,
you know,
I don't know.
At this point, man, I'm hardwired for high friction situations. Like, you know, Kobe would say pressure is a privilege. Like it really is. Like I thrive in those situations now. I don't really get rattled, man. I you know, I think, you know, my mom keeps me grounded. You know, my mentality keeps me grounded. My spirituality does. I think, you know, one of the biggest things too is just being physical. I'm in the gym every day, in the morning, you know, that's where I came from before this. And it's not even it's just the competition against myself. Like it's the gym is a way, like a measurable way to make sure that I'm getting better. But really it unlocks my mental. It's more of a mental thing than a physical thing. I think kind of based on my past, my experiences, and then, you know, actively putting in the work forward, like, you know, there ain't shit I haven't seen before. Like I'm not, there's not a lot of things that get me rattled, to be honest.
you've seen both ends of the pendulum to the nth degree. And I think when you've experienced such grave outcomes both ways, it's like, all right, I can handle anything that comes my way. With that being said too, when someone lets you down now, or when someone maybe on your team isn't doing their part the way that they should be, how do you go about resolving that conflict?
It depends if it's a conflict or not. You know, people make mistakes. I'm human. We're all human. I think, you know, as a leader, being able to coach people up is key. I look at my team like a football roster, right? Like, people need to be put in the right position. You know, you can't put a defensive back on the defensive line. It doesn't work. So, like, making sure people are in the right position, first and foremost, and being able to help coach people up. But if somebody did something egregious, you know, I try to have patience and tolerance. It really just depends on the situation. I don't really have a no-nonsense policy, like, but again, you know, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt, which is a blessing and a curse, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, but it helps you to be a great cheerleader and be a great leader in that role too. I think that every business needs its cheerleaders too. And if it's coming from the person at the top, or the person who's maybe responsible for that, that's huge.
Yeah.
You need that. That's what keeps, I feel like, your people going and doing what their part is in the whole mission.
For sure. Yeah. And I think, yeah, it's just, again, putting people in the right position to succeed, you know, and being, you know, innovative. And I think innovation separates leaders and followers. So making sure that, you know, holding myself accountable again and doing the right thing, and then trusting my team and trusting the process moving forward.
You talked about earlier smelling the roses a little bit more. How do you do that now? And what are the roses that you're smelling?
You know, I consider this time in my life spring training. You know, I'm active 80, 90 hours a week, 7 days a week. I'm really trying to maximize my time so that, you know, by the end of this year and then Q1 27, I'm in a position to just, you know, put the pedal to the floor.
Okay.
So I'm really just trying to take advantage of the time that I have now. You know, this is honestly, this podcast is this conversation is the first time I've really popped my head up. But this is kind of just the beginning. So I want to make sure that I'm good. And I've done everything I can, and I've left no stone unturned. And I put in the work now so that I can be a leader and be able to be there for others to kind of lead the way moving forward.
Who wouldn't want you as one of their leaders, Jim, with the mindsets that you have on it? And thanks for taking the opportunity to be with us too. I know you mentioned that it was kind of your first breath of fresh air, if you will, from it. So when you're in the trenches, it can be rough, right? I think that the consistency is where the consistency comes into play. Because if it's repetitious, if it's hitting the gym every single day, then you know you can count on that and you can keep building.
Yeah.
It's like you have to have some sort of stability.
Consistency is key. It really is.
I feel like that's something that most people don't have.
Yeah, it's kind of never ending too, though. Like, you know, you're climbing Everest and you get to the peak. You're like, oh shit, this is the peak. There's another one. And then you get there and you're like, oh man, I got to keep going. So it's just understanding that it's never ending. But if you put in the work, you know, and have some faith that the dots connect moving forward, then you know, faith or karma or whatever. If you do those two things and you keep doing it and keep hammering, then good will come.
Throughout that process, and you mentioned that leaders are innovators, right? Separating them from followers. Throughout that innovative process, what step of the creation process is your favorite and why? Because it's not sounding like it's reaching that Everest peak.
I like the early stage. You know, it's passion is the fuel and talent is the engine, right? I'm trying to be a V12, but what's the right mix of that? Like, right now is probably 70% passion and 30% talent. I really enjoy like the earlier stages, because you can set the tone, you can pave the way, and you can make sure it's done right from jump so that as things keep growing and keep going, it's done properly.
It's tough when you get later into it to keep going at full steam. outside of the gym, what do you find replenishes you?
Man, the gym's my rock.
Yeah.
It really is. For everything. I think being around good supportive people. I really enjoy that. I think sharing a meal with someone is probably the best part of the day. It's good just to kind of, I want to say unplug because you're never really unplugged, but you know, be able to connect with somebody over a meal. I think that's one of my favorite things.
Having great people around you, I think, is something that we all benefit from. And it's a blessing in a world that's becoming more connected, but also less personally connected.
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of oxymoronic, but it's so important. And I think about just some of the influences I've had in my life, and there's just been great mentors and great people. Who in your life, Jim, do you consider to be a great influence, and what have you taken from them?
One of the biggest influences in my life, one of my former clients' mothers, her name's Christy Cole. I call her Mama Kay. She stepped up massively for me, and she's really been that mother figure for me over the past couple years. And, you know, it's probably the one person that's shown me unconditional love from jump. She's never wavered, and I was a disaster, man. Bad, bad, bad. It was ugly. But she never wavered on me. She had my back fully, and just the way that she lives her life, she's so smart, and her wisdom. She's been great for me, and I'll be forever grateful for that.
Mama Kay sounds awesome.
Mama Kay is great.
That steadfastness is immeasurably great.
Yeah.
People who are forever having your back that's the rarest thing out there.
Very rare.
Especially when the ugly head shows its face, did you know it will, for them to look at you and say, like, no, you're better than that.
And just like as a regular, we get in trouble and, you know, your mom forgives you. Except I'm a grown-ass man now, and that got in trouble and she forgave me too, so.
That's it. There's this notion of connecting the dots, looking backwards. And a question or a reflection that I often dabble in with guests, or when I try and put myself in other people's shoes, like I love doing that. I love looking at situations and being like, all right, I wonder what that person is thinking now, having gone through what they've gone through, and what would they tell 10-year-old them? So Jim, going through what you've gone through now and where you are in this specific moment, what would you tell 10-year-old Jim?
Stop and smell the roses. Take more time for what's really important. Don't let the moment outshadow what it actually really is. But really take time and enjoy those small ones when you can.
You say what's really important. What are those things?
Faith, community, service to others, love, friendship, connection.
All people based.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. That the relationship piece is the biggest.
For sure.
And kind of in a similar note, I think about in your life, you've had some really great collaborations that you've gotten to do. Who have been some of your favorite collaborations and why?
I don't know if I have a favorite. You know, as someone that's like that is a fiduciary for individuals or brands, you know, if I'm picking favorites, right, then I'm not actually doing my job. We've done a lot of cool different, a lot of things, you know, on the individual level, and on the brand side and both. I don't think I have a favorite though. I really do try to put my clients before myself. If you do that and you do it, you know, in good faith, then you're not really picking favorites.
Yeah, it's true. I think that they all teach us something too. And in all of your work, you've established such a sound mindset. And again, I go back, like everyone that knows you talks about how sound of a guy or how humble you are and the great mindsets that you take into each opportunity, into each moment to smell the roses. How do you continue to form that mindset throughout your life?
Reps. Repetition. Again, you know, there's no off switch. It's always on. You know, I think anything in life that's worthwhile is worth overdoing. I know everyone talks about balance, but I'm not a big guy in moderation. you know, I like to do things to the max and push myself because, you know, it's the in those championship rounds is when I think real growth occurs. If not, you're just being lazy.
Yeah, it's that whole, back to Kobe, it's that whole pressure thing, right? When you're under pressure, if you've done the max at that point, you've been 1% better every day to follow that theory. Like
Kobe would say better than yesterday, better than yesterday, better than yesterday. That's the goal. Better than last minute, better than an hour, better than a day, whatever you want it to be, but better than yesterday.
Yeah, it's always growing. Yeah. To have work done on your mindset, I think is so big. That's something that I like to focus on so much in this whole conversation, the whole podcast is just what people do to enhance their well-being through their mindsets. What is their approach? Like that whole idea that there's a rationale behind everyone's actions and there's so much to learn and to grow from with that.
Yeah. I mean, like the Tao said, Ignatius, man, be open to growth. And if you're open to it, you'll never stop learning.
Truth. Man. It's so much, Jim. I just can't even imagine. Like, there's how many people have gone through what you've gone through. And to just be, again, as great as you are, I think is just such a testimony to you and the work that you have put in.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. What about, there's so many questions that come up like just as a result, and I feel fire, like it's away, crazy. Man. Like what about from like a love standpoint, like more than a friendship love standpoint, how difficult is that for you to, I mean, is that something you want, number one? And then how difficult is that for you to even go about that world?
Oh man, that's a tough one. You know, want and need are two different things for sure. Previously I was open to that, but like right now I gotta be good first. If I'm not good, then, you know, there is no love. There is no, you know, more than friendship or anything of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So right now just staying low, but you know, would love to love. I just don't know if that's in the stars, but definitely not right now, I don't think.
You'll know, right? You'll know. Yeah, it's to be vulnerable and like do all that takes a sense of trust in yourself and then also in the other person inherently.
For sure.
And there's a heck of a process to get to that point too.
Yeah.
It's got to develop along the way and you got to put in all that time.
Yeah, I mean, things, if you do the right thing, I think, you know, good things come. Can I read something to you?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So this is my mantra, and it's written on a yellow envelope by my friend Justine at the hospital. But this kind of taps into it, this last part especially. I'm strong, I'm powerful, I push myself and can do the hard things. I love myself. The good things that are meant for me will come to me.
Oh yeah. The good things
I read this every morning. That's literally on the metro envelope. So
Justine is your friend from the hospital.
No, she's just a childhood friend.
Okay,
went
got
to
it.
Town kill together.
Okay,
and we were just, you know, again, my mindset wasn't great, and she was like, "Let's fix that." And she wrote that down, and I've saved it since, and I read it every day.
Jim, that's incredible. Yeah, the repetition of reading that to yourself every day—that self-talk has to be bountifully productive
for sure. But again, that last piece, you know, I love myself and the good things that are meant to me will come to me. I believe if I keep doing that, then it will keep happening because it is happening.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. So when people talk to me about this kind of thing and they'll be like, what, like when you're having a bad day, like, what do? Right. That's a lot of people who are like, oh, I'm having a bad day. Like now what? And they just get stuck and they're just in this bad day all day.
Yeah.
And I always tell them, I'm like, my approach is always to do something good for someone else. Like if, cause when you're having a bad day, you're all caught up in yourself.
For sure.
If you can break out of that and do something that's nice for someone else and I'm not saying it from a selfish perspective. I don't mean it that way, but the way that it works out is that you end up feeling better because you're like, oh, I uplifted someone else. This is great.
Yeah. If you're getting wandering around the axle and you have a bad day, go help someone.
Totally. Yeah.
And then you won't be having a bad day.
And that's
selfish or not. It's true.
True. Exactly. Yeah. It's a double-edged sword in the best of ways. That envelope strikes me that way, right? Justine's great wisdom that she shares on there that you've now read to yourself every day. Is that how you start your day?
Yeah.
Yeah. You start your day with that. You're putting yourself in the best mindset you possibly could.
I start my day with that and gratitude. And then I read a book, Jesus Calling. It was actually my mom's book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I did in the morning.
That's amazing. Does she know that you still read this?
I don't know.
Yeah, you got to send her this. Justine is incredible. Look at the impact, right?
Yeah.
Wow. It is true when you put the good energy out there too, that the world rewards that. It's that whole manifestation, quote unquote, idea that like when you really focus on something, it ends up happening.
Works both ways too, though.
Like bad things you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure. You're negative. You're going to get negative.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jim, what is your personal end game in all of this? What do you see as where you want things to go?
I just hope to help as many people as I can. At the end of the day, we're all just walking each other home anyways.
Mm-hmm. Dierks Bentley says, as a great song. It's are you a country music fan?
I'm not.
No, okay.
Yeah, I was a Dierks Bentley fan.
It is. Well, yeah, it's not really a...
I'm more of a hip-hop guy, but...
Yeah, in the gym, I mean, yeah. you gotta listen to hip-hop rap in the gym. Yeah, it's not his phrase, but he has a great song about it, and he expounds upon it and just talks about all these different people that have influenced his life and realizing that we're all just walking each other home and you take something from every little bit of them.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
We have a closing litany, Jim, that I kind of prepped you on a little bit. It's 5 questions. We're going to run through them. And the first one ties directly into what you were just talking about and the ways that you start your day. The first one is about gratitude. My contention is that people who live with gratitude on the forefront of their minds and practice being grateful have a better life than those who do not. So my question to you, Jim, is what role does gratitude play in your life?
It's critical. It's the foundation. With gratitude, optimism is sustainable. That's how I look at it. I practice gratitude every day. I write it down, either people or things. Oh, yeah, I have my gratitude list today. We'll make it real. Can I share it?
Yeah, please. Are you kidding?
All right, today, grateful for Dr. Justin Dvorak and the Metro Health Trauma Team. That's usually my first grateful because that guy called the perfect game. I wouldn't be here without him. Best friend JT, Jeff Thompson, Brandon Graves, another day to be great. Mama Kay, Christy Cool, Stunky Dre, one of my best friends, Dre, Andre Cisco, his wife Jasmine, my dude C-Dub Chris, he's here today. Scott Cluth, Sarah Block, Jeff Beck, Mishi Arabo, Larry Nance Jr. and his wife Haley, Jason Kokrek, Stephanie, Rocco Whalen of Fahrenheit, Ramon Claudio, Stephanie Schaefer, Mark Smirnelli, my business partner, Ed Reynolds, and his wife, Olivia, my friend, Jess, Dan Inks, Aaron Bischheimer, Brianna Savoca, Justine Palavota. She wrote my mantra. The list goes on. Nick Stanizek, I wouldn't be here today without him either. Bobby Rudder, Nick White and Claire, Alfie and Shumi Brody, Dr. Jeet, great guy. Smartest dude I know. Steve O'Connell, Don Carter, the Harness family, Dr. Meg King, Ebony Davis, Molly Kruger, Kelly Moran, Eva Wright, Luke Basil, Jack Ostrowski, Dr. Nancy Massara, Liam Murphy, Chris Browser, Deb McCafferty, Jackie Bishop Kui, Renee Koffer, Lauren Annie, Stephanie Braun, Amanda Stacks, Zeus Amador, and Charlene. Those are the people I'm grateful for today.
Dude, it made me smile. I don't know half the list, and it makes me smile.
That was my real list for today, this morning.
How intentional. That's tremendous. Yeah, like, again, it made me smile, so I can't imagine, like, with you going through it, like, all these great people that you have in your life that have influenced you to the point that you woke up today and thought about them.
Yeah.
Like, it's so cool, and it's so fulfilling.
I wouldn't be here without any of those people, honestly.
Yeah, and I know you mean it literally, which is, like I feel like that's such a phrase that we hear, but like that is, I mean, you mean it so literally that it's so grave and that gratitude runs deep, man.
Yeah, it does. But yeah, this gratitude is the most important thing.
That's awesome. That's so inspirational. Exactly. Yeah, thank you for sharing that too, Jim.
Well, thank you.
What would you say to people then who knock or talk about this like false optimism or say that optimism is perhaps naivety?
I don't believe that to be true. I would say you're wrong.
I think so too. I think there's so many, we've seen the way that it influences the brain and causes reactions up there to counteract that as well, to counteract that statement.
Yeah.
I was blown away by that. I don't understand the idea that you'd rather live. So let's just say that let's go off their principle that that optimism is naivety. Why would you not want to believe the better outcome? Like, why does that have to be naivety? What if naivety is the opposite? Like, why would you not believe that the worst outcome is naivety?
Seems logical to me, man. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
I really don't.
Yeah, it's something that when I think about this gratitude piece, I've never asked that, but I've always wondered. I think that you and I are in the same boat on that for sure.
Pedal in the right direction.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. God, we got to go forward.
Right.
The second question, Jim. Do you have any regrets in your life? And if so, what have they taught you?
I don't have any regrets. Things that have happened, I've learned from. Bad experiences, but, you know, I've had a lot of bad experiences. But, you know, honestly, I'm grateful for them. Made me who I am today. Success is failure turned inside out. And I believe that to be true. So I don't have any regrets at all.
It is always part of the plan. Somehow, some way, it's an essential piece that does drive us forward. This regret notion. If you regret it, then something would be different. And I don't know that that's necessarily what we want either.
I think everything happens for a reason.
Tying into that, going right into having a gratitude mindset, I think that life's great. I think life's a gift. And I think that having a zeal for life, having something on your calendar creates just an excitement. What's on your calendar, Jim, that you're looking forward to?
A lot. I think a few things. I'm looking forward to sometime this summer, I'm going to go link up with my MGK guys. I haven't seen any of the Americana tour this year. It's the first tour I haven't actually seen. They just started back up, I think last weekend, something like that.
Yeah.
But seeing Dre, Slim, Baze, Rook, Justin, Dub, Dante, Ashley, everybody, Colson, I'm looking forward to seeing that. September 6th, the Nebraska volleyball team plays Missouri at Wrigley Field. That's going to be a sick event. Yeah.
That's so cool.
That's going to be really cool. It's going to be a big day for Bloom as well. Looking forward to that. And December 4th, I'm doing doubles, High Rocks in Anaheim. So I'm linking up with my friend Sarah, and we're going to give High Rocks a run for its money. So I've been training for that.
Wow.
A lot of things, though.
Yeah, but like how cool, right? Like again, you just rattled off two specific dates and then one that you know you're going to go on the Americana tour and Lost Americana.
Yeah.
And see all those guys whenever you pick that date to be. But like you just bang, 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 rattled them off. It's like, that's why
I'm
so cool.
Part of that. And when I go see my MGK guys, Mama K is going to come with me.
So fitting.
Yeah. So she has a grandson named Colson, which is ironic. So
it really is.
Yeah, we're going to link up and do that. So I'm really looking forward to hanging out with her and then seeing my guys, man. It's been a minute.
Oh, yeah. Pick a great city. Go pick a great spot, right? And go see them.
Trying to pick one off the beaten path a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. It's I like the smaller shows, man. Obviously, things have grown so much. But either way, I just want to see my guys, especially Dre. It's my dude.
He was on the list.
Yeah,
he was on the list.
Him and Jazz have been great.
Yeah. God bless him.
And I get to meet his new baby, so that's cool too. I've been missing out on some of that. So
I'm happy you get to do it here, Jim. It's good. I'm excited for those 3 days for you.
Yeah, it's gonna be good.
And to our audience, just a gentle nudge, right? Like life's got a lot going on. Have those things on your calendar that are worth putting on there that you can look forward to, because it does. It creates that excitement. I mean, you see Jim lighting up talking about it. I'm happy hearing about it. So we need those things that kind of fuel our fire and replenish us throughout life and just let us to smell the roses in those moments, create the moments, right? Get it on the calendar and make it something that you can enjoy. Jim, the fourth question is, every night when you lay down to go to bed and you're reflecting on the day that you just had, what is it that you hoped to have brought to the world that day?
You know, every night, most nights, I take inventory of myself. So I look at that. I just hope that I'm service to somebody every day. If I'm not, that's a problem. And just anyone that I interact with or anything that I touch, I want it to be better than I found it. Again, like I said, at the end of the day, man, we're just walking each other home anyway. So if I can help other people, then I think it's been a great day.
That Ignatius Men for Others servile mentality coming to fruition. It is. It's you want to bring about goodness.
Yeah.
I think about that's what I think about too. I'm like, all right, what did I do today that was decent? And then that's also the counter. It's like, what did I do that wasn't so decent? Let's make it decent next time.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. It takes two, I suppose, to tango. Nothing's ever all one way, I don't think.
I agree.
Yeah. The last question, Jim. Do you have a specific piece of advice, kind of your closing monologue of sorts, that you want to offer to a specific sector of the audience or to the audience abroad?
Keep hammering. And it sounds simple, but be consistent, keep doing the right thing, put your best foot forward, and help somebody. But keep hammering.
Keep hammering. The thing that's funny about consistency is it does sound so simple, but it's not. Because it takes, I think it's the hardest thing that human beings could do regularly is being consistent, because it is exactly that. It's regular, it's consistent, it's persistent. That's never ending.
Yeah.
Like when there's no end in sight, there's not a lot of things that people do that have that. And that's what consistency is.
Keep it simple, stupid.
Keep it simple, stupid. Yeah, right. It took me a second. I'm the stupid one. It's like, give me a break here, Jim. Yeah, yeah. The consistency piece is so hard. I mean, that's something like I grapple with all the time. Like even with this, like trying to grow this podcast and have it so that the world can hear these great stories. It's like there's a consistency piece that it takes, and always trying to get better at that and keep hammering.
Yeah.
Jim, truly, I can't thank you enough for this conversation. I feel like you have such a profound story across the board, and the way that you care about others and bring about your best self to each day is something that I know I will take. And also I think our entire audience can derive from you and bring about in their own lives and all the people that they can go and influence and touch as well.
Yeah. And thanks to you and Keith for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's a blast.
You're doing a great thing.
Thank you. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been episode 75 of the Chats with Clark podcast. As you just heard, Jim Walter has amazing stories that are running the gauntlet that have been from one end of the gamut to the other. He has experienced it all. And all of Jim's social media and websites and all the good things will be down in the description below or in the pinned comment if you're watching on YouTube. If you have not already subscribed, I stand by that. I don't know what you're waiting for. We've delivered you 75 primo conversations that probably would benefit you in some way. We like to think so, or someone that you know that you should send this to. So if you haven't hit the subscribe button, definitely hit it. Again, don't know what you're waiting for. But I'm your host, Joe Clark, signing off of episode 75 of the Chats with Clark podcast. Thanks for listening.